I know you're all really busy. We are recording this, so anyone who isn't able to join will put a note about it on our website and a link to the recording. So welcome. It's great to have you here. This is just a meeting of all the PDs for the Society of Pediatric Cardiology Training Program Directors, and we have a bit to cover. There's been a lot of activity recently. And let me go ahead and share some slides with you, and you'll see our agenda. All right, are you seeing the slide or the presentation view?
Presentation view.
Okay. Let me just switch that. I'll just show the slides like this. Okay. I just want to really quickly run through the agenda. We're just going to do a quick welcome, and then we want to talk about the proposed FTE changes and our response to them. Then we're going to talk about the upcoming ACC and what we have in store for the fellows and for the program directors at that meeting. We want to just remind you about the new match dates, the combined pediatric and internal medicine match process. And then we've been asked by COPS to discuss what our thoughts are for recruitment this year, or at least post-COVID travel restrictions.
Lori, we have no slides up right now.
Oh, thank you. And then we're going to, you should see them momentarily. And then we're going to talk about the AAP review course and ABP content guidelines, and then finish with a discussion about the individual programs, how you're putting together sort of board review resources for your fellows. Okay, so just a quick reminder that the current board switched officers or transitioned officers this fall. So I'm the current president. Susan is vice president. Rupali, our new secretary treasurer. Lowell's moved to past president. David Brown and Rob Ross are our COPS representatives. And Lindsay Attaway is our administrator. All right, so Rupali, I appreciate you kind of going through our the ACGME proposed FTE changes and our response.
Sure, so I think most people probably already know this because they must have gotten our survey about 10 days ago. The ACGME put out a proposal to change the recommended guidelines for how much FTE program directors should get for pediatric subspecialties. And you can see here, the down below, the bottom box shows the old guidelines and the top box shows the new ones. And so that the less than seven fellows it was recommended to have 0.2 FTEs. And the big change was that previously, a program with 1 to 3 fellows had 0.2 FTEs, but if you had 4 to 6 fellows, you actually had a bit more. So this was reducing FTE for programs that had 4 to 6 fellows. On the other end of the spectrum, if you had 11 to 15 fellows or greater than 15 fellows, you used to, you know, only get 0.35. And now the recommended FTE was to increase it. And so it was, you can see the guidelines there that they recommended 0.5 and 0.6. So we as a board discussed this, and we had concerns sort of on both ends of the spectrum. One was the smaller programs, especially like the 4 to 6 fellows per program, is 0.2 too little. And then on the other side, you know, greater than 15 fellows, do people think that that's too much? Like 0.6, is that enough? Is that too much? Are you using that, you know, all for the program director, or are you splitting it and using it with the associate program directors? If you're splitting it up, then maybe it's the right amount. If it's all for one person, maybe it's too much. So we surveyed you all about 10 days ago. And thank you to everyone who responded. So we got 30 responses, which was pretty good because we only gave you about 72 hours to do it. And we proposed some alternative FTE schemes. We showed you the ACGME recommended new proposal. And then we showed you this COPS and APPD proposal, and then a modified one. And we asked people which FTE they preferred. The big difference between the two that I have up here, the COPS and the modified. So the COPS basically says a 0.05 increase for every three fellows at the higher end. And at the lower end, it kind of kept the same ACGME requirements that are currently in effect. The modified proposal that most people liked kept 0.2 for zero to three fellows, but actually went up to 0.3 for the four to six fellows program size, and then went up to 0.4, 0.5, and you can see it there. It basically increased based on program size, but kind of held steady. If you're more than 15 fellows, you held steady at 0.6. It didn't keep on increasing indefinitely. So of the 30 of you that replied, 22 preferred the proposal on the right. Two people preferred the ACGME new proposal. Five people preferred the current ACGME guideline, and then one person preferred the COPS APPD proposal. So we took this feedback, and the ACGME had allowed for comment on their proposal through last Friday, I believe. So we submitted a response on behalf of the society and recommended this modified proposal, which essentially changes things mostly for the four to six fellow program size and the greater than 15 fellow program size. Those are sort of the main areas that it hits. And we'll wait to see. We're not quite sure whether the ACGME will take our recommendations and change anything. We did include a rationale for this, for why we want this. And it included the fact that, you know, not all subspecialty pediatric programs are the same. And cardiology is one where the fellows are doing a lot of different rotations in a lot of different areas that require a different level of supervision and a different level of organization and planning. Rather than, you know, a subspecialty fellow that's basically rotating in one main area through their whole fellowship. So, you know, we gave some rationale for why we thought that the cardiology program directors deserved a little bit more. And we'll see what happens. And I think that's the only slides I have for this.
Yeah, that's right, Rupali. Thanks so much for going through that. Does anyone have any comments about this? We didn't have much time, and we appreciate everybody responding to the survey as you did. I think, Rupali, you summarized that great. I'm really hopeful that they'll recognize that pediatric cardiology fellowships do involve a lot of work, especially for the reasons that you mentioned, and that combining programs that have between one and seven fellows into a single lower FTE amount is just, I think, a mistake. I think that's wrong. I do agree that they should increase the FTE to larger programs, and we've supported that. So we'll see if they're going to lump us into all of, you know, and just create one FTE recommendation for all pediatric fellowships, or if they'll listen to our recommendations. All right. If there's no other comments, we'll move on to the next topic, and we'll circle back and let you know as soon as we hear back from the ACGME. Susan, we have the ACC coming up in early April, and Susan's been spearheading our plans to organize some fellow and program director events. So I'm going to let you go through them, Susan.
So as is, you can hear me all?
Yep.
As is common, there is going to be a community day beginning on Friday from 1 until 5 p.m. at the Marriott Marquis. We will encourage fellows to come. I will be sending out something to you all to kind of forward to your fellows about these ACC events. One of the big reasons to come to that is that at the end of it, we're planning a social hour for the faculty and fellows that attend that, a great networking. I feel like we're so behind in networking for our fellows. It'd be great to give them that opportunity. As has worked in the past and usually been quite successful, we're planning the speed dating, which now is scheduled for noon. On Saturday. And if you guys could drop me a note, if you're planning on coming to ACC and you could participate in speed dating with the fellows, that would be wonderful. It's really something they enjoy. And it, again, is a great time for them to network with one another and with us. We're still working on a location. Our meeting, the program director meeting, will be at the Marriott Marquis from 4:30 to 6, and then it's followed right quickly by the ACPC section meeting, same location. So kind of easy to get there. And we'll try to encourage our fellows to start thinking about attending the ACPC section meeting and being part of the ACC as fellows and then faculty. So any questions, but please drop me a note if you're going to be at the ACC. It'd be great if we could have you part of the speed dating thing.
Susan, awesome. I feel like you buried the lead, which is that like everybody like applaud and celebrate. We think we're having an in-person cardiology meeting in general.
Yes, we do. It's amazing. And encourage your fellows to come. You know, we have a couple of fellows going because they're presenting, and we hope this is going to be real, and crossing our fingers that we can accomplish this. So thank you.
Susan, for people who haven't done it, could you just say like three sentences on what the speed dating consists of?
It's been different every year. And we haven't really structured it this year for certain, but what I thought worked well a couple of years ago, and people chime in if you were there, was two faculty at a table, and then the fellows kind of rotated around. One year we made two faculty sit there and talk about, like, I was at the EP and interventional table. And people came if they were interested in EP and interventional. But at other times, it's just been a couple faculty and they ask broader questions about what jobs are like, what, you know, what a career looks like, et cetera. It's really been well attended in the past. And what we thought for this, since we're probably not going to be actually sitting and eating in front of one another, is if we could orchestrate a box lunch for the folks to take with them when they're done. I always thought the lunch was probably what attracted folks there, but there you go. So it's kind of them sitting and us moving had worked well the last time I did it.
And Susan, Divya is asking, would it also be available on virtual platform? I think we're asking about just the whole, all of the activities.
Not definitively the speed dating, but the program directors were hoping to get at a virtual platform. Community day, I don't know. I can ask Arwa. I don't know about that. And definitely not the social hour.
Yeah.
I just wanted to add that I feel over the last 2 years, as everybody sort of adapted to Zoom, like it's been great. And I think more program directors have been able to come to more SPC TPD meetings. Obviously coming to a national meeting, even though things are getting better, obviously travel's a little dicey, your home institution may have restrictions, but it would certainly be great if we continue all the momentum that we've had over the last couple of years. I find these meetings really energizing, and learning from everybody is great. So everybody come to Washington, DC. It's lovely.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Thank you, Susan. That's awesome. Okay. Moving on to the next topic. This is just a reminder. This is a done deal, despite Lowell's great, great efforts to represent sort of the issues or to do things a slightly different way. But we were, as you know, requested to combine the medicine and pediatric subspecialty match dates, primarily to accommodate sort of couples matching and some other logistical things. We represented that moving things up for peds to join the medicine timeline would be somewhat difficult based on just how much we'll have to do through the summer months. But went ahead and is now the official way we're going forward. So just to remind you, these are the dates. Match registration will open August 24th. And as you can see here, everything's shifted up about 2 weeks. So it makes, I think, for a very busy summer for the interview season. And our next topic of, I mean, if there's no comments, we can kind of roll in comments to the next topic, which is that COPS has asked us to come to consensus each of the different subspecialties regarding our preference for recruitment and interview practice when travel restrictions are no longer an issue. Lowell, I'm going to let you take over from here.
Oh, sure. I don't have much. This is really open discussion. I do want to say there was one question, and I was going to comment on it. We don't know. The short answer is no. ERAS is not going to be giving us them any earlier than they have been. What is still unclear to me is whether it's going to be the 1st and the 15th, like applicants can upload starting the July 1st and we get them on the 15th. Or it's going to be what they did summer of 2021, where it was the 1st and the 3rd Wednesday. And, you know, some years it won't matter. Last year it mattered a lot. It was a difference of a week. So don't know yet. They have not given us any guidance in that regard. But you can basically plan on getting the applications sometime between July 15th and July 21st, whatever that is. I do think it does make a difference as you guys are all busy onboarding fellows and, you know, God forbid, taking a vacation. But we'll let you know when we find out.
Just looked that up, and it's the 21st again.
So it's going to be the 3rd Wednesday, I guess, is what they're sticking with. Yeah, yep. Thanks, Rob. Yeah, I didn't know. I guess no movement there. So 1st and 3rd Wednesdays is. Okay, so really, hopefully this is a chance people can unmute, maybe even turn on your camera, and just let us know your thoughts. We've discussed this briefly over the last 2 years, but COPS has officially solicited input on what we really think is best. Just as a little background, we obviously know what we've been doing the last two cycles, COVID related. Prior to last year, there was a document focused on the undergraduate medical education, so med school, to residency transition that actually formally recommended virtual interviews for the foreseeable future. As a small editorial, I'm actually gratified that COPS is asking for subspecialty input, because my concern was going to be they were going to take this application of UME to GME transition and apply it kind of without much discussion to fellowships. And at least we're going through the process of getting opinions. So what do people think? You like the way it was the last 2 years? Go back to the old thing, something new?
Hi, this is Divya. At Mississippi, I think we have had a positive experience with having the virtual option as well. I feel like having a hybrid model where you do have a virtual option, which can help the applicants as well as the programs, and also give an option of, you know, keeping some kind of a model where they can come, you know, we can have maybe a second interview or something like that if participants are, applicants are interested. Or interestingly, one of the applicants had asked about an open house kind of a model during our interview, which I thought was also interesting. But I feel like the virtual part is helpful. Although I see the, you know, it's a totally different experience when you meet somebody face to face. So, I mean, absolutely, the face to face is absolutely worth it. But there are very positive sides to the virtual as well.
I think it levels the playing field. And I think it is, you know, I'm stuck in the middle of Utah, which shows well. And we always like, hey, come and see us. It's so beautiful here. But it hasn't worked badly for us in terms of, it's hard to get here. It's hard to get here from Boston. But it also is expensive. And if, you know, this somewhat levels the playing field so the rich and the poor can be treated equally. What I don't know is if a hybrid is even something that's okay. You know, is I don't know that it's the right thing to do, again, for the same reason. Then rich people get to come and see the program, whereas poor people just have to stay home. Anyway, those are my thoughts. I hated it. I hated moving to it, but it actually hasn't been bad. And we've gotten good candidates. And so far, knock wood, the quality of our fellows has not suffered, which I think is a big question. And we should talk amongst ourselves about that. Does it give you a real idea of who you're getting?
Susan, I think you raise an interesting point. I am not a firm believer that for application from PEDS residency to PEDS cardiology fellowship, an individual candidate's finances are going to end up, whenever we have real solid data, playing too much of a role. However, I think you really raise a point about programs that are geographically isolated. As I look around the Zoom boxes and I see Brad Clark and David Brown and Julie, and I'm probably missing some people here too, but like, you know, you can drive to 12, 15 pediatric cardiology fellowships in the Northeast without much effort, you know, to get somebody to cover your clinical shift. But, you know, you're in Utah, you're at Seattle Children's, you know, you're in Portland, Oregon. It is harder for people to get to. I feel it's more of a geographic isolation thing than it is an applicant money thing. I think as we approach this, trying to represent all of our programs, that's probably a really important point. That being said, I want to go back to in person, but I don't have great data to say why we should, other than that I liked it better.
I mean, Lowell, I think you're right, but I agree with Susan that there's a couple points to that. One, the financial piece, I think, is important, because not only do you have flights, you're right about driving, but you're also talking about hotels. So if somebody wants to apply to 10, 12 programs, then you're talking about 10, 12 nights in a hotel and all that other stuff that does impact people that are on a low salary. And you're right, it impacts people that are in more remote locations. I had people apply from Hawaii and California and Alaska this year. So clearly they were not going to be coming physically here too. And I also think at a smaller program, that advantage is it's better to have them come too, but you also might get a little bit more people that might come that might not have kind of traveled to. So I think smaller programs are at a more of a disadvantage that might kind of be helped by these virtual tours too, where they get to come and meet us and see more, versus where kind of a bigger, more established program, that's not the issue. So, I mean, I would favor a hybrid. It's going to create challenges and it's going to make it harder for us to navigate in-person days versus virtual and all this other stuff we're not realizing until we're in it. But I would favor a hybrid model where you give both options. And I think the open house stuff is possible too, but we should be able to give these people an option to do virtual if that's what they prefer.
Just to clarify, yeah, Brad, you're right. I didn't mean to suggest it's not a cost for applicants. It's obviously a huge cost for applicants. Yeah. My hypothesis is that I think for most applicants, it doesn't necessarily affect where they're going to end up matching very much. Obviously, it's applicant friendly to not make them fly or get hotel rooms or anything right. Like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with you.
Tyler?
Yeah, I think there's a couple concerns. I think a lot of things were good. Some things that you know were not as good. I live in Pittsburgh and everyone thinks it's covered in soot and coal. And so getting people here to see a pretty hospital in a place that actually is kind of nice looking, I think is an advantage for us as well. So I would prefer to do it. Did anyone else think that they got more people that applied to the program who weren't actually serious about showing up? That was the thing I noticed a little bit. We had people apply. We had more people from California and in Florida and in the Northeast apply and interview and use our faculty's time who interviewed them. And we interviewed more people because of that. But we had a bunch of people who I don't think were actually serious about actually ever showing up. And I think there's, if you have to pay to fly to Pittsburgh or drive to Pittsburgh, you're only going to do it if you're serious versus you know, it's very easy to go, eh, sure, I'll throw Pittsburgh on. I'm not actually going to go there. And maybe it gets them in the door so they meet us and they think, oh, aren't we the most wonderful people in the world? It didn't happen this cycle, I don't think, for us. But maybe, you know, maybe it got a couple extra people in the door to at least see us, and maybe we should have wowed them better. But I do think it, you know, is tough there. That's my only thought.
Thank you. And David had a question about how long we have before, or what's the timeline for our comment? Maybe David, you can answer that, or Rob.
So this is Rob Ross. Hi, everybody. I don't think they set a deadline, so I think we have some time. I have a couple of thoughts. One is, it sounds like a hybrid might be a good compromise if we have to change. And one question that comes up is, how can we make it fair so that the people that are in person don't get an undue advantage over those that are doing hybrid, at least in the initial interview process? The other comment I have is that there's some interest in adding a layer to ARIS of having somewhere up to 5 preferred programs for the applicants, so that you and they will know that if you're one of their top 5 choices, even in the beginning of the process. That it's been experimented with, I think, by ENT and several other subspecialties, and it seems to be effective in finding out which candidates are really most interested in you. So that might be another little twist that's going to be coming down the road. And I think, you know, my knowledge about it is pretty rudimentary, but it might be interesting to get people's thoughts on that as well.
Rob, did you watch the video from the AAMC that went over that second year ass layer?
No, I didn't.
Yeah. I'm sort of halfway through it. It's like paused in my Netflix queue. It really is intriguing. Because I agree with you. I mean, yes, there's always the potential that somebody interviews at your program. I did agree with people who said this, and they're like, oh my God, I wasn't taking this seriously, but I really love it. But like I think Tyler said, I think in general, that's few and far between.
David, did you want to add anything from COPS?
Do you mean me?
Yes, David Brown. Yeah.
Yeah, I would say maybe not so much from a COPS standpoint, but I agree with Rob that I think how to make a hybrid system fair, I think is really interesting. And we have to spend some more time sort of thinking about that carefully. But I totally agree with people who say, I've definitely seen an increase in people applying who probably weren't actually going to come to Boston. And the only advantage we have, I guess, is that the hybrid days tend to be half as long as the in-person days, at least that's the way we've been running it. So maybe it's a little less work on our end. That being said, and I've had a lot more West Coast applicants than we used to have. But that being said, some of them have actually matched with us. So I don't know. In the end, I think it's working out just fine for us in the all virtual. But I would definitely love to see a hybrid format.
There's some other people who want to speak. Sinai is one. I just want to say, from a hybrid standpoint, I worry about the applicant. It puts them in a really awkward position. They have to decide whether it's to their advantage to pay the money and come to a program, or to do a hybrid, to do a virtual. And I just think that's a tough decision. I don't know. I just think, obviously it'd be nice to give people a choice, but I think that's extremely awkward.
And unfair.
Yeah, and unfair. It really is, yeah.
And so I would vote against that.
I agree. It's putting the decision in their hands, and how it's an impossible decision, really.
How can we honestly say to the applicants that come versus those that are virtual, it will have an inherent bias to it, right? Those that you come, and we can say all we want, but that we can't, there's no way really to guarantee that that is not the case, that bias will be there. I don't know how you could develop it that way with a hybrid. I really don't.
I agree. Sinai?
Yeah. Hi, everyone. This is Sinai Zabluski. I actually was just going to state the same. So many people have already stated that, but essentially I think, while personally I like the in-person interaction, I envision trying to make the hybrid model fair and to be very challenging.
It's related to this conversation. You know, one of the things that I'm very interested in is I want to know people's interest in my program. I actually want to know it before they interview, because I am sure that I've completely ignored and not interviewed amazing candidates. I'm 100% sure of that. And even ones who maybe had a tie to Washington, D.C., who we were maybe high on their a priori list, and there was no way for them to communicate it. Now, I don't want to create a system that encourages everybody to feel like they have to tell me why they love Washington, D.C., or they're at a disadvantage. But certainly when it comes to at least selecting applicants to interview, you know, if your significant other has employment potential, if you have family ties and you want to move close to them, I kind of want to know that long before I interview. Once they're in the door for the interviews, I like to think we're fairly objective, but I kind of want to know earlier. I know we missed out on a couple of people who really wanted to come to D.C., and there was no way for them to tell me. I mean, I guess you could argue they should be really proactive and email ahead of time, but like I said, I don't want to set that up to be the standard.
I think Andy has a question, Pepe.
Yeah, I agree with what's been said. I did kind of, just to play devil's advocate, you know, this year I had a number of applicants actually from the Northeast, and I would lead off with, you know, have you been to Arizona before? And an amazing number of them said no, you know, and so, you know, right then I'm thinking, well, how, you know, I know it's been brought up before, but how serious are you about moving all the way across the country to a program that you haven't seen before? You know, that being said too, if I have one of my fellows who's interested in EP, I'm going to judge them by how often I see them in the EP lab when they're not on EP. So there is going to absolutely be some inherent bias on who comes to see. But I also want to look at this maybe from the applicant standpoint too. Do we, and maybe this data is out there, I haven't looked for it, but do we know how the applicants feel about not being able to see programs that they're applying to all across the country? You know, I agree that, I mean, we've only existed for 3 years. The first year was in person and the last two are virtual. So, I mean, if anything, I'm more comfortable with virtual now. But how about from an applicant standpoint, what are they expecting, or what do they feel like they're missing out when they're not able to see our programs?
So I liked one idea that was, I think, brought up by this group when we talked about this last year, and that was to have virtual interviews, have our rank lists due, and then after that deadline passes, if the applicants want to visit, and have the applicant rank list due after ours. So we're locked in. So whether someone comes to visit my program after I put my rank list in, like, too bad, I can't change it. So I can't be influenced by whether they come or not, but it allows them to come and see the program, even meet us, because I'm locked in at that point. So they can meet us, and it can impact their rank list. I really like that, but that involves a lot of, you know, people agreeing to changing deadlines, but I think it's something to shoot for. Like, if we stay virtual, I think it would be something to really shoot for, because it would allow applicants to visit a place where they may be uprooting their whole family and moving across the country. I think that's really important for them to be able to come and see it. And if we stay all virtual and say, you can't come see us, or if you come, I can't meet you, because that might unfairly bias me, I feel like that's really hard on the applicant also. So I'm a proponent of virtual for all the fairness issues that have been stated. But I think we should try to have a goal where they're allowed to come visit and that their lists are due after us.
Yeah, I completely agree with that reply. I think if we say they can come if they're interested, they'll feel that that's part of that, you know, the selection process as to identifying their level of interest to us. So I like that idea a lot, Rupali. David, do you want to just, there's a lot of questions about your comment in the chat. Do you want to just tell us a little bit about it?
Oh, sure. So for both of the last two virtual interview cycles, we had a learning module on our LMS that basically showed like a virtual tour of our program, a video about a day in the life of a fellow, just really like 15, 20 minutes worth of videos. And we did say it was required for them to watch those prior to the interview, because we did not show those videos or do any of that kind of touring the hospital during the interview day, other than a happy hour with the fellows after the interview. And basically anyone who, I mean, it was required for everybody, about half of the people who applied with us actually completed it. And anyone who didn't complete it didn't really match with us the first year, even if we ranked them very highly. The following year, we did take that into account as a, you know, a gauge of following directions and interest in our program. And we matched a lot higher this year, taking that into account.
Thank you. And Michael Carr is, you know, commenting on how tight it is, especially now that we've moved the match deadline date earlier. So yeah, it's to accommodate Rupali's suggestion, which other people, it sounds like have put forward as well. It would make things tight. But what I'm hearing is kind of a consensus for virtual, more towards virtual than in person. Some would like some sort of hybrid, though most feel that that's very problematic, and I think would mainly only support it if we separated the rank list deadlines separately for the programs and for the applicants. All right, well, we'll sort of summarize this. We might put together a formal survey so that we have some sort of objective data we can put forward to the to COPS, but thank you all for all of those comments. Julie Glickman, is it, who has a question before we move on?
Nothing. No, that's okay. I was just commenting on agreeing with what everyone else said. I think that as much as one would like in person, I do think from a financial aspect, and somebody mentioned a childcare aspect, it really is easier for the applicant. And it is true. I think people, even if they're just shopping around and they're not sure they would want to come to New York City for a fellowship program or any other state of the union, at least they're willing to engage and maybe they'll change their mind. So I also think that it's not just going to be the decision of this group. I think it's going to be an all or nothing. So either they're going to say all the fellowships are going to be, you know, virtual, or all the fellowships are going to be in person. I don't think we're going to actually have separate options. I may be wrong about that, but I don't think so. That's all. Thanks.
I agree. So there's David and others support a survey. So we'll put a survey together so we can present that to COPS. And then Robert, where are you? You are joining us as a new PD. Yeah, right? From Pittsburgh, is it?
Penn State and Hershey.
Penn State and Hershey. Great. Well, welcome.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, you're right. You know, if we have people, if we say, come on in and see our program, would you have just like a day where everybody interested comes, or would you give, you know, a couple weeks for people to come and see your program? All of those logistics would have to be worked out. And that doesn't give people much time, right? Because if they have 2 weeks to go to the programs they're interested in, they're going to be flying around the country in that very short period of time to see their top choices. That's tough on the applicants as well.
But if our rank list is already submitted, there's no harm to them either, right? That was actually what was proposed in some of the documents that came out last year, right? Our list goes in, it's all for them. If they can't do it, they just have to make their decision the virtual way, right? So,
yeah, you know, true.
Another suggestion that would avoid having to change the rank list dates was that the fellows could come to the hospitals without meeting us, that we could set up a system where they could meet with administration, get a tour, have the chance to look at the environs in the city after their interview, but without interacting with the actual program directors, so that they could have a better way to, you know, make their decision, but we wouldn't be influenced by whether or not they came. In fact, we wouldn't even know.
Yeah. That's another option for sure. Andrew has a question about surveying the recently matched applicants, which would be great. I mean, what do you think about the logistics of that, Lowell?
I would defer to David Werho, who's actually kind of leading this project now. I don't know, David, if you want to comment on that. I know you put it in the chat to get your IRB approval, but it might be worth a blurb right now.
Yeah, we have a work group focused on diversity and culture and how the virtual recruitment process has affected that for the applicants. So we had to go through a few IRB cycles, but it just got approved this week. So I will be sending out the link to the survey to all of you to please distribute to your fellows. Because this is sort of that slump time where they start to really, you know, get to know the dirty underside of the culture of the program and you know, the May blue or the February blues. So hopefully we can get some good data from them to see really what they remember was most helpful from the virtual interviews and whether it did affect the diversity of, you know, if programs just matched more locally to places where they were already, or trainees match more locally, or if they did end up, you know, branching out a little bit more.
But David, is it possible to add a question or two about, you know, looking forward, what would their preference be in terms of it, really just advice?
There are a couple of questions about that as well.
Okay.
Does anybody have
it? Is it only for the fellows that went through the virtual cycle? So like are the fellows that aren't yet arrived and then last year's fellows, or did you want it to, is it to be sent to everybody?
We were going to just send it to the current first year fellows, but we could also send it to the incoming fellows.
I think we should send it to the incoming fellows. I mean, we all have their email addresses and yeah. I think they have a really high chance of responding because they would like to please their new fellowships.
Yeah, absolutely.
The just so people know, if you don't keep up with the data that's out there after the first cycle of virtual recruiting, that when you look at specific questions, do you feel, and not pediatric cardiology specific, and not even peds specific, but all across the board, people generally feel they get a good sense of everything. Culture and feel is the thing they didn't think they could see, and that virtual interviews did a pretty good job of what they wanted out of their interview. But then when you ask the holistic question, would you have preferred in person? The vast majority say yes, despite all the individual either equivalencies or even advantages of virtual interviews. Honestly, that's kind of how I come down. I can't give you a good faith argument why I prefer it other than just that I do. And I know that sounds terrible, but that's kind of where I am. But I do think it's worthwhile now that people have actually trained in their programs to see that that's data that's not out there.
Hey, Lowell, is the first part of that published or can we have access to those results? Because one of my educational leaders was asking about that specifically.
Well, I credit Troy. Troy did a survey across Seattle Children's, not just cardiology. Some of it is published. I can try to dig up a slide and I can put it on our minutes, which will be on our website that has that. Somebody published it in like, you know, internal medicine, I don't know, gen surgery, something. It's pretty consistent across specialties. It's really interesting.
All right, we're going to move on just to get to a couple other topics. And the next one, sorry, I was sharing slides that whole time. I apologize. The next topic is also one that Lowell's going to bring to us. So we want to just talk to you about the fourth year subspecialty fellowships, what we've been doing under Lowell's presidency of the society and what we need from you in the short term. So go ahead, Lowell.
Great. So real quick, this is going to be the third year that we are doing a survey of fourth year availability. And through a lot of pavement pounding, we actually got 100% response the last 2 years. So we have about half the programs in the country represented right now. So I'd ask that at least you guys complete this promptly. It's not a 2-minute survey, but it's less than a 10-minute survey for sure. And it basically just says, what do you offer and who's the contact person? In year one, we did it 2 years ago, and we had some basic information for July of 2021. On the previous slide that was up there, you see that the listing is on our website. And if you can see in the small print, you can click and look at all fourth years, sort by subspecialty. The data is not perfect, but it is the most comprehensive data out there. And it's actually better than any subspecialty society, save one. Next slide. So last year we redid it. We wanted to make sure that our contact information was up to date. We're getting involved associate program directors, just in general, sort of an ulterior motive. But we added the request for fourth year program direct contact info because those things tend to run outside of the categorical fellowship. So we started to gather that. And actually we had conversations with Society of Pediatric Echo, PCICS, PACES, and a sort of amorphous group of interested cath attendings. And actually, because PCICS is incredibly well organized, the cardiac critical care group actually moved forward, which I thought was amazingly impressive. And I'm gonna ask Sinead Zabluski to just comment on how it went, what they had, and you know, successes and challenges. So this year, I don't anticipate changing the survey. But what we will do is, in addition to sending it to all of you, so again, please ask your colleagues about what's going to be offered. We're also going to send it to those fourth year directors directly. If there is discrepant data, we'll probably just side with the fourth year directors. We do have a survey that's lurking in the bowels of my Outlook inbox that was designed by Kristen Bonello, who's our fellow rep, about what do fellows want out of this process. The goal of that is to find out if they're on board with understanding what they can expect in the process. I don't think anybody's going to be surprised that they would definitely like some certainty about what's going to come in the process, but we can get that sort of in writing. Next slide. So I just want to show some of the great work that PCICS did. So Sinead sort of crosses both universes of program directors and cardiac ICU. And they moved forward with a common application and a common timeline. And I'm just kind of curious how it went for all you guys. You can show the next slide and then I'll turn it over. This is their listing of how they wanted it to go. Next slide. And these are the groups they got involved. So it was pretty wide ranging. I was really, really quite impressed with it. So Sinead, I don't know if you want to comment on what worked, what didn't work, and where you see it going.
Sure. So the group that we outreached to try to devise this process were the 24 programs that are listed on the website that train fourth year fellows in pediatric cardiac critical care. And then what's listed on this white, this slide here are the ones that had positions that were open to external candidates. So some of the institutions, for example, that had already committed to filling with an internal candidate, so they didn't participate in this common application process. We've done one cycle. I think it was an interesting year in the sense that it did open a little bit of a Pandora's box of additional questions and issues. The general feedback and impression that I've gotten thus far is that most programs were comfortable with a shared timeline with a start date for receiving applications. And then having common application material seemed to be well received. Where it has been more challenging and we're trying to navigate and we're actually trying to get more information right now through the form of an internal anonymous survey is the offer process. So there are a couple of institutions who have expressed concern that the process favors larger training programs and that smaller institutions are at a disadvantage. What I don't know is the perspective from the applicants so far. You know, my kind of anecdotal experience is that the applicants favor this improved transparency in terms of timelines and favor the process of knowing that that offers are going to be delivered in a short window time frame, and they're not stuck in that awkward situation where they get an offer very early in the year and are not sure if they should accept it and if they may be getting another offer, you know, potentially six weeks later. So that's where we are. We're, you know, trying to currently decide how to move forward for next year's cycle. I will be curious to see if it's going to end up morphing into a process where there is a common application form and there's a timeline where there's agreed consensus about a start date. But I suspect there are some institutions that are not interested in participating in a common offer date. The other piece that this process raised questions about was we really don't know what our denominator is in terms of how many applicants are in the total applicant pool, how many applicants matched outside of this time frame, this, you know, for example, after the October 1st deadline, how many applicants enter the pool late after the critical care or pediatric cardiology match of those who pursued the dual boarding pathway. And so that's some of the information we're trying to glean from our survey.
Sunet, thanks for that. It, you know, certainly I think your group, first of all, did a fantastic job, like more than we ever could have expected. Just for people who may not be familiar with this, whether you're a new PD or some other reason, you know, we even explored match options. The short answer is a match for fourth years is possible, but it's hard to get the buy-in from all the programs. So those are the challenges. You may also know that the heart failure and transplant community actually has been doing this for a number of years. I think can and should be held up as a model of how to do it. That being said, I know for a fact, even in this last cycle, there was a heart failure and transplant program that offered a candidate a spot before the agreed upon date. So there's not an enforcement mechanism. You know, I'm hopeful that at the very least we can provide a resource for applicants about where they should reach out to find out if there's a spot and hopefully, you know, give them notice that there is a spot. It's even better if they know what might be expected in an application and they don't have to send 13 emails saying, what do you want, right? Although a common application today wasn't even part of the initial proposal. You guys just did that. And I think it's a great idea. It's not all that crazy. Couple of letters, your school, CV, whatever, right? But if there could be some transparency for people getting offers, to me, that's the goal. And you know, maybe we just keep talking about it every year and little by little, we get better.
Right. And this, if you don't know about this, take a minute to look at the website and see what's there and share it with your fellows, because it really is a huge step forward. And just to have this information out there, and you can just, as Lowell said, you can just click on all of the subspecialties and then you'll see which programs are offering, which programs usually accept, but not this year, that kind of thing. It was really helpful to a lot of fellow applicants this year. So thanks, Lowell. Any comments about that, questions? We're going to be sending out the survey pretty soon, and we just ask that you fill it out to the best of your ability so that we have the most accurate data. Because again, this is totally unhelpful if it's inaccurate. We really appreciate the time you put into giving us the right information.
Laura, I just wanted to say this was a huge advance. So congrats for putting it together. Super helpful. My fellows really loved having the resource. And the only thing I was going to ask is if we could try to keep it up to date as the season goes by, because there were many programs that filled along the way, if you will, so that it looked like they were accepting applications when they were actually already filled. And I'm happy to do that for the Boston slots, but if we could try to keep it on our radar to keep it up to date as that season goes on, that would be helpful.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Our fellows were very appreciative. Thank you.
Great. Okay, we have just a few minutes and I wanted to pretty quickly just remind you all that the American Board of Pediatrics just about 2 weeks ago put out new content outline for the certification exam, which is going to be, this is effective for this next exam in the fall. And so if you can get a hold of this, go onto the web, we can put a link on the website, but basically they've, you know, identified these content domains, which is not a new thing, but some of the categories are different. And then they have this sort of thing where there's four different things that they might ask about for each domain. And so really taking a minute to look at the content outline, I think is helpful. This is kind of a, they put this as an example of a question. So basically just talk about a patient and ask what the diagnosis is. And then they say, okay, this was a question about this content domain and the task that was involved. So going back to the slide, so these are the content domains and these are the four tasks. So that's kind of supposedly how they're putting questions together. And then they've weighted how much of the exam will be represented by each of these domains, like they've done in the past. Some of the exam weights have changed a little bit. And yeah, that's pretty much it. It's a plug to just to make sure you're aware that this has changed. I also wanted to say the AAP is putting together its board review course. It'll be August 8th through the 12th. It's going to be at the AAP headquarters in Chicago. There's going to be an in-person component to it with additional virtual content. So we don't have to pack each day with as much material. There'll be all of these in-person talks will also be recorded. So people don't have to go to it if they prefer a complete virtual format. But if they like the idea of taking a week and just focusing on review, they can show up for this Monday through Friday period and then either re-listen to some talks in a recorded format and also get some additional talks, topics covered in a recorded format. We're also working with the AAP Fellows and Early Career Committee. There's some volunteers from that want to be involved in this and are going to help make it an interactive, some parts of this a very interactive activity. There'll be study groups, for instance, in the evenings if people want to do that, and lots of practice questions. So please share this with your fellows if they're interested in taking a board review course. And then really finally, I just wanted to open this up. We don't have a lot of time, but the AAP Fellowship and Early Career Committee have been asked by their constituents to increase or improve resources for them to study for the boards or prepare for the boards along the way, not just right after graduation, but throughout the 3 years of fellowship. So they're trying to do something where they're putting together like questions every month and then sending those out to all fellows across the country, that kind of thing. They haven't really clarified what they're going to do, but they're coming up with ideas. And I'm coming to you with questions. I know some of you have really excellent board review kind of processes that you bring to your your individual fellowships. I wonder if maybe at the next meeting, I can ask someone to share what they do. And then another idea I have is there something we could do across our fellowships so that we each don't have to create our own board review process? In other words, modules that we could share that any fellow could just sort of log into. So that's my question. Is anyone willing to share what they do for their fellows in terms of a 3-year board review curriculum?
Hey, Lindsay, It's Julie. I don't arrange it. Leo Lieberman, who's one of my EP colleagues, actually arranges and has arranged for the past several years a really great board review class. And actually, because of the virtual nature that it became, it was actually opened up internationally as well. I don't put it together, so I can't take any credit for it, but I know he does a really great job. And I could ask him if he could just send maybe a link or something to you guys. I don't put it together, but I know it's been really helpful in the past.
That'd be great, Julie. Maybe I could just speak with him, maybe connect us and we
I
can
will.
Take it from there. Okay.
I will do that. Thanks.
I think Emory also has a really good program. Does anyone else have something they're proud of in their program? Okay. All right. Well, that's okay. What I think is, you know, this is tough. Fellows ask, I think a lot of our fellows ask for it. If they don't ask for it, they want it. And if we could share resources rather than each of us kind of reinventing the wheel, I think that's a great use of this society. So I will work on that. That's it for what I wanted to cover today. Does anyone have any questions, comments? Our next meeting will be at the ACC. And again, you don't have to be there. You can join us virtually. We'll put an agenda out. If you want something on the agenda, send me an email and we'll talk about it.
Hey, Laurie, this is way more, I'm a APD at WashU. I'm sorry, I may have missed this, but going back to the board review that you had mentioned in virtual or in person in Chicago, was there a cost to that we can pass along to our fellows?
Yes, I don't know it offhand, but I will, I think we have a save the date and it's actually on our website. So if you want to refer them to the SPC TPD website for more information about this, there'll also be something on the AAP website very soon and the cost should be there very soon. It's gonna be, we're really trying to decrease the cost for people. And I think because we have this combination of, we're not bringing all the speakers out to Chicago, we will be able to reduce it somewhat. But I'll let,
sure. Look,
I don't think we have it out there yet.
When I say when I looked last time, it maybe wasn't up yet, but I'll keep checking. Thank you.
Yeah, it's been more expensive. Last year, it was like $500 because it was all virtual. And so really we were able to cut the cost and obviously it's $500 for the course and they don't have to fly and they don't have to have a hotel room. So it was significantly lower cost than 7 to 8 years ago when it was $2,000. But it will be more expensive than a complete virtual, obviously, but you know, we're keeping an eye on it. Okay, so at the ACC, we'll see you again. I think the ACC is going to be a really important good meeting as well. We have a lot to discuss and some of this we'll circle back on and get more thoughts. All right, I don't think anything in the chat needs to be discussed.
Everybody come to Washington, D.C., party in my backyard.
Yeah. Thanks everyone for joining. Grace, you stay on just for a minute and I'll answer your question.
So much. Nice to meet everyone.
Nice to meet you, Rob.